Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Dr. Jones, and we're going to be chatting about a number of different sectors here. I want to start with energy because you spend a lot of your career in the energy space, and some of your recent comments for the energy space is that you have been quite bullish on energy. Our last few conversations, you're outlining still reasons why the energy complex was going to remain strong, and fair enough. The energy complex has remained strong. As we're recording this, crude is still, it's a 108, reached 110 earlier today. What's your thought on the energy space? Because of the weakness broadly, do you think we're finally at a point where energy could slow down?
Yeah. Hi, Corey. Thanks for having me back. Hey, Shad. Yeah. Right now, oil itself, it's very hard to model. And I think we're getting a little extended in the evaluations of the oil and gas companies in the near term. The EIA report came out, and we're seeing production flat in the United States and declining demand for jet fuel and gasoline. Also, refinery utilizations are down, giving a skewed picture of what supply is. At the same time, we have China locked down, which is causing a lot of demand destruction, as well as the rise in the dollar index against other currencies also makes people in other places outside the United States that are paying for their gasoline or crude oil cut back on. They can't buy the same amount as they could before with whatever amount of money they had set aside for that purchase. So people start to conserve. So as well, you also have the rise for the larger oil companies that pay dividends or some of the juniors in Canada that are paying a yield right now. As the 10-year rises, it competes with dividend-paying stocks, whereas before you're getting 4 or 5% from this oil company and the 10-year was only at 1%. That's a great arbitrage. But now you have the 10-year at 3.1, likely going above 4 sometime this year. It causes competition because people rotate into the safety and security of treasuries backed by the United States government versus an oil and gas company for those who are seeking income. So that puts downward pressure on those equities. As well, in a contraction of liquidity in the market, people sell what they can. And the oil companies tend to have a bid still where some of the juniors in other areas, there's not a lot of people on the bid right now. So all those factors in the near term can cause pressure on them. Long term, I think energy is a great place to be. But for those who are nimble enough, they could lighten up on their positions in the hopes of being able to buy back in at a 10, 20% discount to today. Plus, if the lockdowns persist, interest rates rising, and we get tipped into a recession, you'll see the demand won't be there. And even though there's an embargo on Russia, those barrels are still finding their way to China. China's buying the Russian oil. So even though parts of the EU will boycott Russian oil, the oil does find its way to market. So it's not necessarily those 3 million barrels are suddenly locked in Russia. That's not exactly what happens. On the natural gas side, we're seeing the competition for the global price permeating into the United States as more volumes are being shipped out of the United States to Europe. There is the injection season was a lot lower than anticipated, and we're coming into a high demand season. So if someone was sophisticated enough, you could go short oil and long natural gas, perhaps as a pair trade. But, I wouldn't recommend that for your average retail investor. I would say looking at companies that are willing to lock in their hedges right now over the next 6 months to a year of a high percentage of their production is not a bad place to be in the energy space for those who want to ride this out. That's kind of my view on the energy market right now. You look at the best performing commodities this year with the exclusion of lithium, it's coal, oil, natural gas, and the oil derivatives, heating oil, gasoline. So it's I wouldn't want to be in consumer discretionary right now because the cost of living is rising so drastically. So that's kind of my view.
That's an interesting take on the energy markets, Doc Jones. And I know that in a related fashion, you brought up lithium there, but there's also the energy metals. You could argue that uranium's an energy metal, but the big energy metals that are on most people's radar as far as trading are copper and nickel. But what's your take on the base metals as particularly they relate to the energy metals since we're on the energy topic?
Yeah, I'm positioning now for the next year to 3 years in the energy metals, copper, zinc, lead, lithium. Nickel, I find it really hard to find a good nickel project that is not already fully valued. So I would include that if you can find something. I'm looking for the Dixie to peak next quarter and China reopening. So that will bring a lot of demand into the market. And as these higher energy prices persist, one thing that I feel very confident in is that the governments around the world will continue with their green energy policies and electrification. And so there'll be an embedded demand in there for these base metals, as well as for infrastructure. When governments spend to create GDP and create jobs, infrastructure is really most of what they can do, aside from transfer payments, but those don't really have a lasting effect. And as well, when you think of the war that's going on in Ukraine, at some point, you know, let's say that that ends, there's going to be a massive rebuild there as well. It's going to require a lot of steel, zinc, copper, lead, you know, all those things. Yeah, so that's my belief there. And the prices are very good for, you know, zinc hit an all-time high recently, right? It's come off a bit, but it's still $1.80. And you have smelters in the UK that have shut down because of the energy cost is so high. So I don't see energy really coming off drastically. For example, natural gas, I don't see it falling 70%. It may come down 25%. But that just means those smelters, there has to be a margin there for them to produce the zinc or else they won't. And if the problem is energy prices, I don't see them coming down much. So that means the price of zinc has to rise enough where it creates enough margin, much like the crack spread in an oil refining, right? The refiners won't operate if they can't make a decent spread on refining a barrel of crude. So I think that's how I'm looking at it. And because of the geopolitical climate globally, I'm looking at assets that are domiciled in safe jurisdictions like Canada. Recently, I took a position in Osisko Metals, which has an option with Glencore for the Gas Bay Copper Project, which looks very attractive to me. You know, I maintain my position in Ambrita Resources because of the zinc, lead, copper, gold, silver that they have there. Yeah, that's basically how I'm looking at it.
So, Doc Jones, does this mean that you're taking a bit more of a defensive strategy? It does sound like you're taking an even narrower focus when it comes to certain companies, looking at protection on the downside. Is that portfolio wide for you?
For the most part, like the problem is a lot of liquidity came out of the venture market over the last 2 months. So, you know, to dispose of any positions has become extremely, extremely tough. So in my large cap portfolio, I've been lightening up positions, you know, some of these ones I've had for years, to create liquidity so that I have optionality should we get a deep market crash like we saw a few years ago. Yeah, and I think, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea for your average investor out there to go through their portfolio and see what it is that they have a profit on. Or, you know, you can always, you know, sell a portion of a position that you book a profit and then go through the list and find another one that you have a loss on and, you know, match them both so that you have no tax liability. And that way, and this warehouse the cash. And if things do go amok and things do go down, you know, 10, 20, 30%, you can always buy your position back, lowering your average cost and then generating some free cash on the side. You know, it behooves me at times. Like I get a lot of messages from people, just random people over the internet or whatnot. I had some guy the other day like, hey, I borrowed $20,000 on my credit card. What should I buy? What do you think is going to be up a month from now? I'm like, that's not what I do. I don't tell people when to buy or sell, right? Specifically. And two, that is such a bad strategy. Who knows where the markets are going to be or any stock will be a month from now? I certainly don't. That's why I do all this research and go, I have a timeline for thesis to be confirmed over 1 to 3 years, because a lot can happen in the short term, right? And taking on leverage, anyone out there who's thinking about using margin or leverage to trade, I think that's a really, really bad idea. You never want to be in a position where you have to sell something to cover a debt or something like that, because chances are it'll always be at the worst possible time. Yeah, so I think a defensive position is a good idea. It's a time to warehouse some cash. And by all means, anyone who is investing in this market, scale in and realize maybe the first time you buy it won't be the bottom. You know, like I generally scale into my positions. You know, I'll take, you know, a quarter position or half a position right off the bat and then monitor it and average up or average down depending on what the news flow out of the company. Barring special situations, it's a time to exercise a little bit of caution and be cognizant of the market that we're in and have a thesis of where you see things a year from now. I guess that would be the advice.
That's such good advice, Doc Jones. And I 100% agree that the biggest mistakes people make, especially in a very volatile junior resource sector, is trying to plop all the money at one time. I usually scale in 3 to 5 tranches and increase or decrease it based on how things are going, and you never know. So it's always good to take a scaled approach and to be on the defensive in these kind of markets. Just to wrap up, you had mentioned that you do all this due diligence and you do quite a bit of research into each company. And you were just on a site visit with a company we've had on the show earlier in the year, Millennial Precious Metals, MPM on the venture, MLPMF on the OTC. Since you were out on site in Nevada, just give us the quick recap of what you found.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. I was at the Wildcat property there. They have two properties, but we went to Wildcat. Wildcat is the property that has about 900,000 ounces already in the resource. It's an oxide open pit, heap leach, so very low cost, high margin project. And what was really exciting there was the geology. Like the footprint there of the alteration is like 2.4 kilometers by 1.6 kilometers, and they've drilled down to 150 meters so far, and they're still in the oxide. And at the surface, walking over here, you can see the silica right everywhere. And what's important about that is the tenor of the silica, you can tell the temperature of the system. And within the silica, you could see fossilized leaves and pieces of trees that were embedded in the silica whenever this volcano or whatnot erupted and the ash came down and preserved it. And what that tells you is that the whole system is intact, that there hasn't been an erosion of the top part of the system. And that type of silica, that tenor, basically tells you that the temperature was about 200 degrees at that point. And the boiling zone is still there. It's going to be lower. And if it's mineralized at the very top where they have the 900,000 ounces, there is a very good possibility that at depth, getting in the boiling zone where they'll have better grades and a lot more gold in that footprint. Yeah, so it was very exciting. It looks really good. You know, I have my own models on it and all that, but it'll be a mine at some point. And, you know, see the infrastructure. Like, it was really great because talking with the economic geologists there, that even they've already planned where they're going to put the processing facility, and that he came up with a decision because they're going to be using these electric vehicles, right, to move the ore. And it's on a decline where they're going to put it. So the batteries charge as the trucks full of ore are going down. And then they'll turn around and come up empties, which requires less energy. And in doing so, over the life of the mine, it's positive that it'll save $30-35 million in OPEX just by being aware of the slope and how you can use the topography to lower your cost, because you're going to be using these electric haul trucks, right? So yeah, it was really good. I was really impressed. It's a great team. I was there and there was like 6 PhDs around me, geologists, and going through the project. So yeah, it looks really great. I think everyone will be delighted when they come out with their PEA at the end of this year. Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Okay. Doc Jones, thanks for shedding some light on that site visit. It's always good to see the project and get an understanding for what is around that project in terms of infrastructure as well. We'll be chatting with you again shortly, Doc. It's very interesting to hear kind of what your strategy is right now. And again, that pressure, it sounds like weighing on a lot of sectors broadly, but you need to be selective out there, right? And there is still opportunities, but Doc Jones, great chatting with you. Thank you, as always, for your time. We look forward to our next conversation. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Well, thank you, and you too as well. Always great to chat.